Welcome to the Frank Reactions Show, where you'll learn how to inspire, understand, and improve customer reactions to what you have to offer so your organization will thrive in our hyper-connected era. My name is Tema Frank. This podcast is an outgrowth of the Frank Online Marketing Show, which I started in 2012. You see, online marketing is crucial, but it goes both ways. If customers don't have great experiences with you, they'll do their own anti-marketing in social media that can kill your business. So in this show, we talk about how you can develop the best people and processes in the back end so you'll be able to win by delivering great customer experiences online and off. Here's today's show. Today's guest is Kelly Harper, Director of Customer Experience Learning at BMO Financial Group. BMO launched a major customer experience initiative way back in 2008. And as Kelly discusses in the interview, it's a long-term project when you're talking about an organization with 45,000 employees and many lines of business. I'm sure you're going to learn a lot from this interview. I'll chat with you very briefly at the end of it.
My name is Kelly Harper, and I'm the Director of Brand and Customer Experience Learning at BMO Financial Group.
Okay. And how long have you been in that role?
So I've been in the role for just over 2 years.
Okay. And where were you with the bank before that?
So prior to that, I was in corporate marketing, and I led the launch of the BMO brand in 2008 and established our customer experience discipline within corporate marketing, focused on driving customer experience strategy centrally for the organization. And then prior to that, I was a marketer in wealth management. So I've been at BMO for 17 years.
Wow. Okay, cool. Yeah. So when you were the first person that they had in a customer experience role, is that right?
Yes.
And how did that come about? Was that your suggestion? Was that how did that happen?
So I was first both centrally when we launched our vision to be the bank that defines great customer experience. And I've been in the first in my current role as well in terms of looking at customer experience learning. Okay. And so which do you want me to focus on, the perspective from a learning perspective? More general?
Let's start more general.
Okay. So in 2008, we launched our vision to be the bank that defines great customer experience, just as customer experience really was taking off. And we did recognize that it was a very aspirational vision for the organization. And I'll be honest, I don't think we really knew what it meant, because there's no degree in customer experience. It is still a new and emerging discipline, this many years later. And so my role then was to really understand, what did it mean for us as an organization to truly change how we drive our business and to be customer focused and to be a customer experience driven organization. So we surrounded ourselves and we spent a lot of time with Bruce Temkin, with Foresters, with Gene Bliss, in understanding, well, what were some of those pioneers in customer experience focused on? And what were then some of the activities that we needed to start demonstrating within the organization? So, okay, for example, how do you build a voice of the customer program? What's the customer room? How do you bring the customer into the room? How do you use a tool like journey mapping? And how could we get some experience actually mapping our journeys? And so we did a lot of test and learns, a lot of beta testing, if you will, to start understanding what those disciplines were as they were also being more formalized within the space.
So you say you start by conducting some little experiments and some learning. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you learned during those early stages?
So certainly the first was that everyone had a different understanding of what customer experience was. And we were fortunate in that we launched the vision at the same time as we relaunched the brand. And I was originally responsible just for the brand, but we recognized you can't talk about one without the other. Because the experience is bringing your brand to life, and your brand is your differentiator. So what I say to organizations is, if you don't understand who you are and how you're different, then do that first before you start thinking about the customer experience. Yeah. Because otherwise it will just be, a higher level of customer service, or it really won't be a differentiated experience that you're designing and delivering. So we knew we needed to level set the organization, because we're a big organization. We have 45,000 employees, many different businesses. The businesses mm-hmm. that were relationship driven felt that they did this already. Okay. So they really thought this was customer service on steroids, I would say. Okay. And so they thought, well, this is just about the retail bank. This isn't about us. So we really had to level set. What did that mean for us as an organization when we talked about customer experience? And so we talked about how customer experience was not just customer. It wasn't just a measure. And we launched Net Promoter Score as our measure at the same time. So it wasn't just a number. It wasn't a program or initiative. That it was truly, you know, every perception that the customer had and every actual experience they had at every touch point across the organization. And we needed to then define, well, what did we want that experience to be?
Okay.
And so we talk about four things at BMO when we talk about, you know, what makes a great customer experience. And the first is that it's consistent.
Right.
The second is that it's differentiated, and that's why, you know, your brand is so important. The third is that it's intentional, that you've chosen to focus on either certain segments or certain products that you do better than anyone else. Okay. And then the fourth is twofold in that it's valuable to the customer and it drives value for the organization.
Makes sense.
Right. It's one of the misconceptions out there is that customer experience is about giving every customer everything that they want.
Right.
And that's not it at all. And it's really understanding, you know, who are those high value customers and how can you align where you drive value for your organization? Because at the end of the day, there's a business case around and an economics case around customer experience. So it was really bringing that to life and level setting the organization on those four key elements about what makes a customer experience great.
Okay, I realize this question moves a little bit back to your brand issues, but and for our non-Canadian listeners, Canada has a small number of very big banks.
Yes.
And in the general public perception, I used to work for the Canadian Bankers Association, I know the field fairly well. In the public perception, they're all kind of the same.
Right.
So how do you differentiate? You're offering the same basic services as the other big five or big four. Mm-hmm. How can you possibly make that different?
So for us at BMO, it was not so much in the what, it was in the how. And so so we did recognize that our products have become commoditized. A checking account is a checking account. You know, we all have online banking, you know, platforms. You know, we all sell mortgages. But it really was in the how. And so where could we carve out a space that was unique? And at the time in 2008, and we launched our brand just ahead of the recession that came in the fall of 2008. And the positioning and the recognition was all around the fact that financial matters are complex and banks actually were part of the problem instead of part of the solution. And we knew that our customers were overwhelmed and we wanted to help them grow their confidence in the choices that they made by providing them, you know, insight and guidance. And so it wasn't just about the product. It was really about making sure it was the right product at the right time and really understanding what was important to our customer. So it was focused on the how.
Okay. You do that. Now, you're also, as you say, in a huge organization that over the years has had many change initiatives. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome what's got to be the natural cynicism of a heck of a lot of employees? Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where our biggest learning was, which really after 6 years resulted in the role that I'm in now, is that we spent so much time focused on developing and articulating that customer experience strategy from the outside, if you will, is that we didn't truly understand, have we articulated what it means for the employee to actually deliver that great customer experience? And have we really done a good job, exactly as you said, from a change management perspective in managing that change? Because it required new behaviors. It required a different way to look at interactions with our customers. It wasn't just about the transaction. It was really about getting to a point where we were providing meaningful guidance and that the customer was leaving confident. And so we recognized that originally when customer experience started, the value chain talked about great customer experiences drive loyalty and loyalty drives growth. And the loyalty means I buy more, I refer family and friends, and I stay longer at your organization. That's what drives the growth. But without highly engaged employees at the front of that value chain, you're not going to deliver great experiences.
Right.
So in 2012, you know, our head of HR recognized we need to make sure that our people strategy aligns to our customer experience strategy. And so I'm part of our Institute for Learning, and we're very fortunate at BMO Financial Group. And we actually have a physical place. We've just actually had our 20th anniversary this year, where we're committed to building skills and capabilities of our employees, and said, you know, let's start looking at all our roles and development programs and making sure that we're truly embedding customer experience in everything that we do, so that employees are engaged and they know what's expected of them to deliver those great experiences, and that they're enabled to do so.
Yeah. And this is what I'm finding, because as I said, I'm writing this book about that started with the intention of being a marketing book. Okay. And then I realized, you know, you've got to get into the whole customer experience stuff, and then you've got to get into human resources.
Right.
You've got to get into processes. Yeah. It becomes pretty enormous.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little while back that some areas in your organization felt they were already doing good customer experience.
Yeah.
They were high touch with the customers. Mm-hmm. So what needed to be changed in terms of what they were doing, and how did you persuade them that it was something different?
So there was a lot of, I'll use the word socializing, and a lot of working with businesses in different ways, which can be exhausting.
Yes.
But it was also, as we developed the brand, we had a set of brand principles, and we recognized that for different businesses to really own this and see the opportunity, we had to make this relevant for them. So we started by taking the brand principles that we had and their descriptions that were somewhat general, and we actually did a series of workshops with key stakeholders in the businesses to articulate, well, what does that mean in your business? And at the time, those brand principles were simplify, understand, and guide. And it was through those mechanisms that we would, you know, bring the experience to life and bring the brand to life. But what did that mean in the retail bank versus in BMO Nesbitt Burns, our full service brokerage, versus our capital markets groups or our global asset management groups? And
right.
So that through that process, it really helped for them to better understand that, A, what was branding, and really take it out of the marketing department, and for them to recognize that everybody in the organization owns the brand and owns bringing it to life, and then gave them an opportunity as we co-created what those definitions were for them to see where they could actually advance their business and accelerate their business. And that was, I'll admit, it was a long process, and, you know, timing is everything. And businesses were ready to do it at different stages. And I think, again, you know, if I sort of step back and think, what was some of the learning? We probably didn't have a robust governance structure in place. And at the time, it was almost voluntary. You know, it's like, here was this thing, customer experience, and here was this enterprise customer experience group that was there to support you. But there was no mandate to have to report into them. So it was very much through the fact that I'd been at the organization a long time and I'd created deep relationships that I could actually reach out and say, I have an idea. What do you think about this? And we kind of found friendlies in the different businesses to start demonstrating the value. And then slowly over time, as they started to, A, be held more accountable at the leadership level, and then as they were seeing their numbers move and their businesses, you know, economics line up, you know, they started buying in.
Can you give me an example of something specific that a group like that might have changed, might be doing differently now from before?
Right. So the first was really around journey mapping. So we worked we recognized that, you know, journey mapping is a great decision-making tool around customer experience. You know, I believe that there's a spectrum of journey mapping. Two people can sit in a room and do it on the back of an envelope and figure out, okay, if we make a change here at this customer touch point, what's the impact going to be? Right to the full-blown, full relationship, qualitative, quantitative conversations with customers, your full ecosystem, and using it to make either repairs to the current experience, or re-engineer completely new experiences.
Right.
And so, we had an opportunity to work with two different groups. So one was a product group, so our mortgage team within our retail bank in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was BMO Nesbitt Burns, so our full-service brokerage. And so they both wanted to do something. And we said, okay, well, let's use this as a central group to understand how do we want to do journey mapping. We worked with some different vendors and some great vendors that actually helped us fish and just didn't fish for us. So they were teaching us to fish so we could do this. And on the BMO Nesbitt Burns side, what they came out with was a customer experience journey map that was based on the end-to-end relationship that a Nesbitt Burns advisor would have with their customer. And it helped them sort of plot out what was now their customer experience strategy going to be for the next 3 years. And they could see where was the low-hanging fruit. And one example was they thought they needed to redesign their statements. And after the research came back, we were able to demonstrate both qualitative and quantitatively that they were actually over-delivering on something that was not that important to the customer. So do not invest more money in redesigning a statement. What customers really wanted was their expectations managed by their investment advisor. They wanted more contact and more consistent contact. So for that business, it became really around a lot of cultural change initiatives in how how our BMO investment advisors were interacting with their clients. On the mortgage side, the project started because they thought they needed to redesign the mortgage application. And it turned out from a customer perspective is like the application happens at the very end and it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
What really matters is when I sit down, especially as a first time home buyer, is if that banker or that mortgage specialist took the time to understand, well, what did owning a home mean to me in my life? What did I like to do? You know, what was the emotional importance? Was I a young family just starting out? Was I a couple that really liked to travel and still, you know, eat out and dine out so that I could actually get the right home and the right fit for my lifestyle to the point where especially say, you know what, I actually don't think even though you could afford the $600,000 house, if you still want to travel and go out for dinner, maybe you should buy the $400,000 house.
So that's great.
Conversation about values and lifestyle. Yes. And then along the way, understanding what like the mortgage options were in terms of variable rate, fixed rate, those type of things. But we had that the most success with customers that it wasn't about the mortgage. It was help me understand what owning a home means and all the things that go in with that. So it really changed the conversation that we had with mortgages. And at the simplest level, we referred to the research as lending, but to a customer, it's borrowing. And so even that mind shift.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Very much. We tend to only think of ourselves and it's the outside in. And it really helped us to make sure we were that our starting point was the customer and not. And so not inside out, from outside in was the way to do it.
Absolutely. It's funny. I think back to the first house that we bought and had that very experience of going to the bank and they told us they'd give us a mortgage for that was probably double what we thought we could really afford.
Right.
But it was based on our view of lifestyle.
That's right.
And you're right. There was no discussion of that at all. Yeah. So they were treating it as a commodity and then wonder why the customer treats them as a commodity.
Exactly. So. And you know, we saw certainly what happens, you know, when the U.S. went through the recession that they did, how, you know, people were so overextended on their homes and ended up losing their homes. And, you know, I think it was a cautionary tale for Canada, and that, you know, while we did not go through, you know, the depth of recession that the U.S. did, I think we have a bit of a false sense of security in terms of you know, how stable we are personally, and it's very easy to get overextended. And certainly, you know, living in a market, you know, I'm in Toronto, and when you see what housing prices are in Toronto, it's if you don't understand what those trade-offs are. And it's even as simple as understanding as a first-time homeowner, what are all those costs to closing a home as a first time? So we matched that up with, we had a program called First Time Home Essentials. So where we actually created the support then, because it really showed us that, you know, there was an opportunity to help in meaningful ways that really had nothing to do with that actual mortgage. And sometimes not even the rate. And that was the other misconception we were able to dispel for the business, that while rate was important, it wasn't the only factor for a customer and them deciding, you know, was that a great experience or not. The customers wanted a competitive rate. They wanted to feel that nothing was left on the table. But that last quarter point wasn't necessarily the most important thing if the banker had taken the time to understand truly what owning a home meant to me in my lifestyle.
Well, and this is what I keep telling companies too, is that as long as you're within the ballpark, the customer service and customer experience that you deliver can make that difference. If people, even online, when they, you know, people are shopping for good prices, but if your price is in the ballpark and you give them a great customer experience on your website, they'll buy from you. They're not going to spend time continuing to hunt.
Exactly. And then, so that work, that journey mapping then led to, there were 8 initiatives that came out of that. And I think the true key, when you think about journey mapping is it doesn't end when you get your map, that it really then starts the conversation and it's the action planning to really decide, well, what are you going to do with this information? And it resulted in 8 initiatives that, the business was going to undertake. And so they started looking at what were those irritants, within the process then that were then also getting in the way. And we started looking at things like turnaround and the time that, you know, customers were waiting for things. And it's interesting that you bring up about really understanding what you're changing and what the impact is. Because if there's a process improvement that has a certainly a financial benefit for the organization to change, say, something from 5 days to 3 days, you know, that can be, you know, result in great productivity savings for the organization, but you can't assume that will necessarily translate into a customer experience benefit. And so there's a lot of talk about lean process these days. If that amount of time is acceptable to the customer, and if it's an industry standard, changing it to 5 days to 3 days isn't going to give you a lift in customer experience because that wasn't important and you were already meeting expectations. So it helped us understand, it's like, if you truly want to move the customer experience forward as well as, you know, make process improve, you had to marry them up. So you had to marry up an irritant that could also then have a benefit from the organization and at least use that to prioritize and not then make assumptions that if I just change this to 3 days, we're going to get a bump in our NPS because it really wasn't relevant to the customer.
So you really have to start with some good customer research to understand what are the important things to your customers.
Very much so. And you also then need to understand behind the scenes how your business really works and how you drive value. And it comes back to this, what I said earlier, that customer experience isn't about giving every customer everything. You need to sometimes as a business make hard choices and to say, you know what, that's not the business that we're in. Or, you know what, that's not our primary customer. So I'm not saying we're going to give them a bad experience, but you know, we're going to meet the minimum level of expectation and that's going to be okay. And that there are some times that we might have to say no, that's not the business we're in because that we can't drive value for the business that way.
Now, how do you deal with that from a public perception point of view? Because you're trying to change how people perceive your brand. Mm-hmm. You offer service to a huge proportion of the public. So invariably, some of those are going to be in your category of people you don't really want to emphasize that much.
Right.
They're going to have not so great experiences and talk about them publicly. How do you prevent that from spilling over to your overall brand?
Right. So we talk about customer experience as a hierarchy. And so if you think back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that on the bottom of that pyramid are basic transactions and executional considerations that we want to get excellent all the time. So on basic transactions, we focus on executional excellence. So, you know, statements are always delivered on time and error-free. ATMs always have cash in them. You know, it's about those basic service transactions that we strive to deliver with excellence. So so that speaks to the, you know, that base level that we're not saying just because you only have a checking account, you're going to get a different level of experience. But then as you move up the hierarchy and sort of think about, well, the next level would be value-added services that we might choose to give to just certain segments. You know, because that's where the opportunity is to build a deeper relationship. And then the top of the pyramid are those true customer experience differentiators that for us really focus on guidance and a high touch, which again, you can't give that high touch experience to everyone. You need to segment and make sure, you know, it's you're doing that where it's really driving value. And so so we were very particular about saying this isn't about saying we're going to give someone a bad experience. But we're really going to choose which ones that we dial up and for which customer we do that for.
Okay. So you start, everybody meets sort of a basic expectations level.
Exactly.
And then you differentiate at the higher end. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that strikes me, and I give an example fairly often of one of my first experiences working with a bank, not yours, many, many years ago. And we hired great frontline staff, and you know, they were very customer service focused. And then screw-ups kept happening in the back end. So it ultimately destroyed our attempt to give great customer service, because people, there's only so long you can keep saying, I'm sorry.
Yes.
When you've got a huge bureaucratic organization, how can you change process at the level of depth that's really needed to make sure that it follows through into great customer experience?
Where do we start?
How do you break that down? Yeah. Where do you start?
Yeah, well, we start by thinking of customer experience as a journey, that this, it doesn't happen quickly. And we really do have to prioritize, you know, where we're going to make those investments and where they're going to have the biggest benefit. So it really is then a collaboration between, you know, the businesses, you know, our technology partners, and understanding, you know, where we move forward. What's interesting, though, when I started this journey, I used to think that, oh, if we only had this piece of technology, everything would be great. But there are a lot of things you can do that actually don't require technology dollars and aren't about, you know, process improvement. So I think it's also fun, you know, not using that as a shield to hide behind, in that, oh, you can't move customer experience before because we don't have the technology dollars. Then, you know, how are there other creative ways to do this? You know, are you mining perhaps best practices in your organization? Whereas, you know, in a highly regulated organization like financial services, best practices are sometimes dirty little secrets. We don't want to tell people because we think we're going to get into trouble because we're not following policy. But our employees are creative, and we know our employees are actually committed to our vision. They want to do the best for their customers. And so they find ways to make that happen. So in creating a culture that's collaborative, where employees feel comfortable to share those things, you know, helps us find some workarounds in the short term until perhaps a technology fix catches up. But it also bubbles to the surface things that we may not realize are actually in, you know, barriers.
How do you get
so it helps us actually determine, it's like, oh, we didn't realize that was such a big deal. So it lets us start looking at perhaps how we're allocating those dollars differently.
So how do you get people to share the little tweaks that they've done that may be questionable in terms of the official policy?
So those are some of the social aspects that we're actually just exploring now in the organization. And so one of our businesses is just testing a program called Idea Exchange, where it really is an online collaborative tool where people can, you know, provides a platform to share that information where people can build upon ideas. But again, social, you know, is something that the banks are pretty late to the table on from a customer perspective, but also internally. And it just really stems from the fact that we're such, you know, so highly regulated, and there's such a concern that something is going to be, you know, something's going to be done wrong, or someone's going to say the wrong thing. So it really is, you know, sometimes I'll be honest, it feels like two steps forward, one step back. But you need to sort of look at sort of the bigger picture and recognizing that this is almost a 200-year-old organization, 45,000 employees. It doesn't change overnight. And anyone who's been involved in, you know, cultural change, and that truly what it is for us, because we see customer experiences changing how we do business. It's not just a flavor of the day for us. It's here to stay, that we need to be committed for the long term.
Yeah, for sure. So from your perspective, you talk about it being, you know, sometimes feeling like one step forward, two steps back, or the reverse. How do you on an ongoing basis measure your success and the areas where you're not succeeding as well? How do you keep track of that?
So a couple of ways. So in the early days, what we created something called a cultural index when we launched the vision and started on our customer experience. We actually started measuring employee engagement, which we've been doing for a long time, but we created a cultural index as well. And we started, you know, taking a look at the relationship between the two. And then we did find that, you know, the higher the employee engagement, the higher the cultural index, which just really showed us that the employees bought into what we were doing. They believed in it, you know, with their whole hearts. We just needed to enable it for them. And then we also were able to do to further build out the proof points and the economics by demonstrating that those branches that had higher employee engagement score indexes also had higher net promoter scores. And so So let's put the debate about, is this the right thing to do, to rest? Because you know, it tends to be a distraction. Mm-hmm. And say, you know what, if you believe in the business case, if you believe in the economic model of customer experience, then, you know, build it and they will come. Like those numbers will come. After a little while, we did sort of come into a bit of a roadblock in recognizing that, well, okay, our NPS has grown. It had grown from, I think, when we started this 17 to in the low 40s. But we actually weren't seeing some of the benefits from customer experience. So we weren't seeing a growth in market share. We weren't seeing a lot of new customers. And we started to ask ourselves, well, is the model wrong? Is there a problem with the model? And we really had to understand what was happening. And we learned a couple of things. One, that in some areas we were probably incentivizing NPS in not a very good way. So in terms
Tell
of...
Tell me more.
Right, so if a customer had a problem, it was really easy to do things like reserve service charges or give them some air miles, as we're really sorry about that, which translated into a bump in the number, but not in the behavior that you want to go with the number, right? And so, yeah, they were happy to give you a number because you made them happy in the moment, but that doesn't necessarily mean they were going to refer family and friends.
Right.
And then the other piece of it was recognizing that you won't get a referral unless you ask for a referral, and you won't get more business unless you ask for more business. So we had to start at the same time recognizing that we did have to move more to a sales culture than from a service culture. And that if we were having a great conversation, you know, with a customer or prospect, that we had to ask for the business and we had to ask for the referral. That it wouldn't just come on its own. People are not, you know, volunteering mortgage referrals at dinner parties unless they feel like, you know, wow, this was really exceptional. So we had to create, as I say, this was then another part of the cultural change, and that you had to ask for the business in a different way. And then the third piece I'll say is we started, you know, questioning and challenging the time that it actually takes to convert loyalty into growth. And we don't have an answer on this. And so while we believe in the economics, think about the mortgage experience. If you buy a 5-year fixed mortgage, you're not going to have the next experience for 5 years. So you might have had a great first time experience. And then if someone says, well, would you refer? It's like, I'm not sure. Ask me when I renew. So the time that it takes to make that referral, you know, my hypothesis is very, very different in financial services than, say, the airline industry. Whereas if you have a great flight and someone says, would you fly with them again? It's like, yes, I would recommend them. And it's almost immediate and in the moment, but financial services is different. And then the other piece I would say to that is, if I refer my family and friends to my favorite restaurant and they have an, a so-so time, our relationship will probably handle, you know, the fallout of that referral, and it might only be out $100. But if I refer my financial services organization, there's a lot more at risk, not only financially, if that doesn't work out for them, but I think also in the personal relationship, I have to be really confident about that relationship because I know how much it means to people. We know how personal money is to people and how important those decisions are. So people don't take those referrals lightly.
Does it mean, I mean, I'm thinking about from the viewpoint of, let's say, small business banking. Mm-hmm. One of the complaints that you hear is, you know, we've just explained and got our branch manager up to date with what we do and how we do it, and then think we get somebody new.
Yes.
How do you deal with that tension? Because if you're trying to build solid relationships, but you have a model that means staff are constantly moving, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So that insight actually came out. We did some journey mapping with our commercial business and with our small business clients. And that was one of the biggest irritants is that, you know, there's so much turnover. And, you know, I think we had to step back in the organization and said, we have to make this not the customer's problem. This is our problem. So we needed to understand why were people leaving? Why were our employees leaving? And what was getting in the way in terms of why this wasn't a great career, a great fit for them? But then also we needed to build transition planning into that activity when an employee left so that we could actually transfer that knowledge. And part of that was, you know, having the conversations. But then the other part was, you know, instilling better behaviors to start diarizing the history of the client. And making sure that, you know, that was captured in whether it's Salesforce.com that an organization uses or whatever type of CRM tool that you have. So it's actually there. And again, it's back to much of customer experience is behavior change. And it really is, you know, are you incenting the right behavior? Are you making the time, like the right amount of time in an employee's day to do those types of activities? And so, again, we had to start thinking about, well, how are we going to actually transition this business banking customer from one account manager to another?
So it's a constant balancing act.
It is.
Because on one hand, you want your employees to be quick and efficient and not waste time. On the other hand, you recognize that to build the relationship, that's going to take more time.
Exactly. So then it also became, what do you do in the moment with the customer versus what do you do after the customer has left? Because the customer shouldn't be waiting while you're diarizing the conversation you just had with the customer.
Right.
So it's really understanding, you know, the flow of business and making sure that we're satisfying the customer's needs first and foremost in that market or in that moment, but then capturing, you know, the history of that as we move forward. Because the customer has the expectation that you know me, that you know my business, and that, you know, they think we have it all in a system somewhere. So it's how do we actually make use of it? And if we don't have it, we need to manage our customers' expectations. And I think that is an interesting one for us in financial services, because, you know, people think, well, if Amazon knows what I like to read and what I bought last week, how come the bank doesn't know that I have all these relationships? And there are actually regulations between some of our businesses that prevents that. But we also know that the customer sees us as one organization. So how do we work within that to acknowledge the multiple relationship to the best of our ability and then manage the customer's expectations about what we can actually do with that information?
Right. Okay. This is fascinating. I could go on forever, but we do need to wrap it up. I guess final question is, if somebody were just walking into a large organization and was put in charge of improving customer experience, what would you advise them? How should they start?
I would first ask about, you know, how do you differentiate yourselves in the marketplace? So, you know, do you truly understand your organization and your brand and all those elements of good brand strategy? And so if we assume the answer is yes to that, great. Mm-hmm. Then you need to think about, really, do our employees understand what it means to bring that to life? So you need to think about, how are you bringing your employees along? And so we developed actually a customer experience learning strategy for BMO Financial Group. And we started by segmenting our employees into four groups. And the first was, what did all employees need to know? And that was about the level set, about what is customer experience and what does it mean? And so we level set, you know, probably around 3/4 of the organization. And then we started building it into orientation. So new employees that would come in would get that same information. So that we're all at a level set. And then the next layer is, if I'm delivering experiences, and I could be on the phone, in a branch, I could be creating our web platforms, like our online banking experience delivery, what did I need to know? And that really became about, what were the behaviors in your brand building blocks or your brand principles, whatever you call them, that actually bring them to life? And how are you demonstrating them across every touch point with your customer?
Okay.
The next piece down, and it gets a little bit more specialized, is, if I'm now accountable for experience design, what do I need to know? And this is where, if I'm in a product group or if I'm in a process improvement group or a technology group, they tend to be corporate groups, what are some of the skills and capabilities I need? And so things like journey mapping as a decision-making tool, you know, how do we teach our employees to do that? And then how do we govern around it? And then the most specialized would be, if you have customer experience practitioners in your organization, what skills and capabilities they need, do they need to effectively drive change? And because we have not found yet, you know, a course, there is no degree in customer experience, we've started piecing together, well, what would a curriculum even look like if we were a customer experience practitioner? And then we looked at, well, then what are the learning programs that then support those different segments? And then, so we started with, well, what is pure customer experience learning? And so we have a program called the Fundamentals of Customer Experience, that at the heart of that is a customer experience learning map. We've worked with Root Learning, and I know a lot of my colleagues in the space have as well. And it really is about creating a dialogue to help your employees understand this thing called customer experience that is very, very unique to your organization.
Okay.
We're developing now a journey mapping and creative problem solving program so that we go, this is how you do a journey map, but then this is how you action it. Because creative problem solving skills can be developed. You know, divergent and convergent thinking is a process. Not everyone knows how to do that, but to really get to those great ideas, you need to work through those 100 that maybe aren't so good to get to that real gem that you're looking for. And so really, so building out that customer experience curriculum.
Yep.
The second area is now we're embedding customer experience in all our learning and development programs. So whether it's orientation, whether it's role-based learning, there needs to be a thread that goes through everything around customer experience. And it's done in part with our facilitators that they speak the language of customer experience. And so that if they're facilitating a credit course, I'll use that as an example, where we're helping our employees evaluate, you know, is this customer going to be approved for this mortgage or not? Yeah, we don't end at the yes or the no. We then say, well, how are you going to deliver that no message in a way that works for the customer? How are you going to help them understand why they're not getting approved? Perhaps what they can do over the next short term to improve their situation and really deliver what is not a great message, but in a really humane way.
Nice.
And then we have our own instructional designer. So are we even designing learning from a customer experience perspective? We tend to, most of our programs are really come from a risk and a regulatory perspective and not a customer. So it really is from even a design perspective, bringing the two together.
Yeah.
The third area is really then around sustainment is what do leaders need to do? What do people managers need to do around employee engagement? So this is where we look at our leadership development, our leader capabilities to say, again, how are we weaving customer experience and the focus on the customer into those programs to be able to sustain the learning? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth really is how are we innovating and incubating new ideas? So looking for that white space to truly leapfrog and find new opportunities. So that learning strategy is now what my role is in saying, okay, how do we move our people forward? How do we engage our employees to want to deliver those great customer experiences?
Wow. It's exciting. It is exciting to see what you're doing.
Thank you
very much for the time. Is there anything that I should have asked you and I haven't?
No, I would just say that, you know, patience is a great virtue to have when you're doing customer experience work, that it is a journey. And I think that whether you're new to it or you've been doing it for a while, it can seem very overwhelming because, you know, there can be a lot to do, and sustaining that work is really challenging. And so I think you have to draw on, you know, strong disciplines around change management. You know, governance is really, really important. Having that top level buy-in that's actually going to clear some of those barriers and get the organization moving forward is really essential.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, the courage to try new things and that it won't always be perfect right out of the gate, that there will be some trial and error along the way. So being able to sort of make sure that you're working within a culture that supports that.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Tom. My pleasure.
Lots of great advice in there for companies looking to improve their customer experience and their profitability. In the coming weeks, we'll have more tales from the trenches, like Kelly's, as well as more talks with experts in fields related to customer experience. And as I've mentioned earlier, customer experience, of course, covers a wide range of things, including marketing strategy, human resources strategy, and leadership. So those topics will all be covered, but always with a focus on how do they play into improving customer experience and profitability. This episode will be going up on January 8th of 2014, a memorable day for me because it's my son's birthday. I haven't yet got the new Frank Reactions brand into iTunes, so for now you can still find this podcast listed as the Frank Online Marketing Show in iTunes and Stitcher or at our website. And you can now reach our website through the shorter URL, frankreactions.com. I'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks. In the meantime, I would love to get your feedback on the show, your suggestions for guests or specific topics you'd like us to cover, and any questions you might have. You can always reach me by email, tema@frankreactions.com, by phone on our toll-free line, 1-866-544-9262, or on Twitter at Tema Frank, TemaFrank, on LinkedIn, etc., etc. Look forward to chatting with you again soon. Bye.